The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Danny Cannell, Chip Patterson, Barton Simmons, and Tom Fernelli. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fernelli, that's Danny Cannell, that's Barton Simmons, I'm Chip Patterson. Lot to get to today as we are kicking off a holiday weekend. We've got not our usual Thursday selections, but Friday is going to have some headliners, a couple top 25 versus top 25 matchups. Saturday doesn't give us the normal rivalry slate, but we do have the Iron Bowl and others. Much more we will get to throughout. And of course, checking in with our week 13 early line look ahead. Got a couple questions about some teams, but we begin with the hottest controversy in college football right now, because when we had the college football Saturday and the news of Clemson and Florida State being postponed initially came out, it was followed by some reporting. We had some levels, and by the time 12 o'clock came around, I think that we had a little bit of clarity in terms of the situation. We didn't discuss it much on the Instant Reaction podcast because we had a full slate of games, right? Like, we dealt with the news from 9 a.m. to noon, and then all of a sudden the games took over. We had the whole, like, is Michigan going to lose to Rutgers was very much in the instant part of the Instant Reaction show. But then we've got Dabo Swinney's Sunday teleconference comments, and we've got Athletic Director Dan Radakovich going on Packer and Durham. Couple different sides to this that I would that I'd like to pick apart, but we got to start with Danny Cannell. I mean, this is Knowles to go at the beginning of the show, right? I mean, this is like Knowles to go right off the jump. Danny, I know that I'd like to think that Clemson didn't want that smoke. Tweet from at Danny Cannell was actually what inspired Dabo Swinney to come out on Sunday, because I know Dabo follows you from his burner account, and he didn't
totally.
He didn't like that taunting when he spent. I mean, we set up the Ringley Brothers tent in an empty parking lot. We spent $300,000 trying to get 9 buses to get the team together. He's angry, man. You know what do you make of this?
He is fired up. This is angry Dabo, which we've seen before. I've been trying to figure out, like, what's such the big deal about this game? Like, it's not really a resume builder, right? It's not going to help their chances to get to the playoff. Maybe it's about Trevor Lawrence's Heisman campaign. That would make more sense. It's a stat game where you can go out there. I'm sure there are frustrations. I understand that. You did make some efforts to go to the game. But you know what you probably should have done before you traveled to the game? Had the test situation buttoned up so that this didn't happen specifically. But now the unfortunate thing that's happened is basically Dabo has become the guy in the chat room who's on there all caps yelling at everybody saying, this is what happened. This is where we need to go. And it kind of sparks this flurry of activity that goes out there, because now you've got Clemson fans who are even more angry and they're following Dabo, their Pied Piper, right down that road. And it doesn't make anybody look good. Like, it just is a really unfortunate situation. I get that you're disappointed, but really the way you handle this is you put out your statement, say, we're really bummed. We wanted to play. We thought we could play. It's unfortunate. And maybe we'll make the game up. Or you don't even have to say that. Just cut the statement off short. To air out your dirty laundry the way that Florida State and Clemson and the ACC, they all look bad in this circumstance. In a year when we've all been dealt a bad hand, why make it worse? But I can't understand for the life of me why Dabo Swinney is making such a big deal out of this game specifically. It doesn't make sense to me. You know, I'm looking at theory of, the recruits. Well, Florida State didn't want to get beat down by, Clemson because maybe it helped their recruits. Newsflash, Florida State isn't very good. Like, if you're a recruit and you think that, that would have made the difference if, they got beat by Clemson by 70. Now I'm not going there. If you really believe that to be the case, then I have a bigger problem with you as a person. I don't know why it's been made such a big deal of. I get you traveled and it sucks and there was some money involved, but there's a lot of money out there that's been lost this season. It's not like you guys are the only one that have lost a big payday.
I got a theory on why it's a big deal. So it's not my theory. I got to credit Bud Elliott for digging this up. And I think he's in the midst of writing something on it right now. But here's the ACC official rules on the season. For any team to be eligible for the ACC football championship game or to be considered in a tiebreaker, such team must have played within one total conference game of the average number of conference games played by all conference teams. All right. So, for example, whatever, you guys get it. All right. So, currently, Clemson is... So 9.73
is the average.
Is the average right now. If Clemson didn't make up this game and Miami were to go ahead and, went out and complete all their games, and if we assume everything sort of goes status quo, Clemson would not be eligible for the ACC championship without rescheduling this game. Now, currently, Clemson is sitting there with an open date prior to the ACC championship game. Now, Notre Dame is probably going to have to play Wake Forest before the ACC championship game. So basically, as I see it, and I don't know if this is why Dabo's pissed, but it might be, is he's looking at this being like, man, we're about to have a pretty sweet deal where we sit out before the ACC championship game and we're golden. Now, we may have to play these jokers a week before the game, risk somebody getting hurt, miss our week of rest, and we have to reschedule it. So he's a little pissed, in addition to just the inconvenience of showing up down in Tallahassee and being sent back home. Perhaps that's kind of what's got him peeved, is the idea that, like, he can't just let this slide. Like, they got to get this on the schedule again.
I don't know. I mean, you know what another thing he might be pissed about, or why he might be so pissed? If that game's played on Saturday and it was a 35-point spread, Clemson cruises to a win. Are we talking about Clemson right now?
No.
Okay.
I mean, with Danny, we are. You know,
is anybody paying any? Nobody's paying attention to that game if it gets played, even though it's Clemson Florida State, because it's probably a huge blowout. It's not going to have any impact on the ranking, because if Clemson blows out Florida State, then they're just going to stay where they were ranked. But now we're talking about Clemson.
No, so that's a very cynical Tom for now.
I'm just taking the same approach Dabo is, where he's pretending Clemson's the victim here. Where, you flew to Tallahassee with a player on your team that you found out had COVID. And the other team's doctors decided, I don't know, sitting on a plane and then a bus with a kid who has COVID in a recirculated air thing, that might not be the safest situation. I'm not sure we should play this game. We don't know. Now, could Florida State have delayed the game maybe till Sunday or Monday? Yeah. Do I blame them for not wanting to play it on Saturday? No. But I think Dabo is just doing the thing where Dabo does, where he pretends the entire world is against Clemson, and then something goes against Clemson. And it can't just be that the whole world is in a place right now, where we're dealing with the thing that has far bigger than football and far more important than your college football program, where his whole world revolves around his college football program. So he thinks that they're the victim here. They're the ones who are getting screwed, and he's angry about it. And I get it, because, man, I would be annoyed too if I flew down there for all that, get ready to play a game, and then the game got canceled. But, like, he can complain that it cost Clemson $300,000. But his own AD said today on the Packer and Durham, if they have a chance to make up a game, like say their Pitt game is canceled, they would rather make up that Pitt game because the Pitt game is in Clemson and that makeup game will be in Death Valley. So,
which is Clemson, why Dabo's out here being like, and if they want to make it up, you know what? Y'all can come to Clemson. Yeah, like, this has become a straight up like revenue issue for Clemson.
Exactly. So he's sitting here crying about how Clemson spent the money and they lost money. And that sucks. I'm not saying it doesn't matter because we're in a deal where we're only playing these games for money this year. Let's be legit. That's the prime factor deciding behind playing this season, because, man, they were already losing too much money. We had to save as much money as possible. So he's pissed that they lost $300,000. But Florida State gave up revenue by not playing the game. It was a home game. It's not like they're sitting there just like, oh, we're scared. We don't want to play Clemson. They're going to beat us up. No, man, they had revenue that they lost. So Clemson's sitting here worried about its lost revenue. Florida State's lost money too. You aren't the only victim here, Dabo.
So that,
get over it.
I think Dabo has seasonal mood swings that has him in late November warming up the Roy bus, right? Like, he cannot help it. It's just what he does. He's used to having a couple of weeks of college football playoff rankings. We won't have the first one until Tuesday this year, but he just can't help himself. He's just so damn fired up at nobody believes in us. Nobody's treating little old Clemson with any respect. And it's just, it's what he does at this time every single year. And like, there are so many better ways, and I say better as in like de-escalate this situation, that he could have handled this, and he couldn't help himself, man. He just has to go and throw those extra. Woody Whitehurst on Twitter, fan of the show, he mentioned this, so I want to make sure I shout him out on it. He said, it was like when you've won an argument with your spouse or you've made the good points, but you just can't help yourself and throw in those like three or four extra lines or digs that are just, it's not going to help anything. Like, you've made your point. That's it. But
a couple of
make it worse. Hold on.
You can win an argument with your
but a couple of those points I want to point out aren't exactly fair or accurate, because he himself made the comparison when Trevor Lawrence was positive and that he practiced with the team, and then Boston College, they didn't. They came to Clemson. There wasn't, Trevor Lawrence wasn't on a plane in an enclosed atmosphere with all those players in a tight space. So it is not an accurate comparison there. And then there's this other one. I don't think this came from Dabo. This is more of a message board, people trying to figure out, you know, the little internet sleuths trying to do their thing, that this quote, same thing happened with Pitt. When they went to Florida State, there supposedly was a player that had the exact same issue. That's not true either. Andrew Adelson with ESPN confirmed that. They've done some research on that, saying, no, this didn't happen to anybody else. This is a one time, this is the only time it's happened. So that's the problem when you rally the troops, kind of, as Dabo has done, is now you get all this anger coming your way and people come up with these conspiracy theories. There is no doubt in my mind Florida State wasn't really thrilled about playing Clemson. They knew what was going to happen, just like all of us did. But you can't say that they just needed an excuse to get out of the game, because as Tom said, Florida State is in way worse of a position financially than Clemson is. They had a lot to lose, and they would have tried to do everything they could if they felt it was safe. But again, to me, it's airing out your dirty laundry and nobody looks good. It's like the couple that's fun at fighting on the front lawn in front of the whole neighborhood's like, ugh, look at those people. Well, they got problems.
And the ACC's not saying anything. It's like, it's very, very.
Did you hear Radakovich's theory? He's like, well, you know, maybe the ACC needs to have an arbiter on site. What about a phone? Can you just get somebody from the ACC to get a FaceTime or a phone call and say, here's our problem. Here's exactly what's transpired. Can you guys give us some direction? Maybe that would solve things.
It's very.
That would have solved anything, though. Basically, it's just sort of like Florida State just was like, nah, we're not going
to
play.
Because, the ACC said.
You can't force them to play if their doctors are like, no, this isn't safe. Then there's just some dude like, I have decided that you must play.
I mean, Clemson was with, like, the protocols in place. Clemson was within those protocols. Like, they passed those protocols. They were according to the letter of the law, like, the ACC was approving of this game to take place.
Yes.
Dabo even mentioned specifically the travel roster being extended from 72 to 80 in order to give yourself more room to work with in case there was a Friday positive test. So, you know, far be it for me to like take sides,
But you're on Dabo's side?
No, but I want to present Dabo's side.
Yeah.
I want to present Dabo's perspective. A lot of Dabo hating on here. I do think it's fair for the frustration. I agree with the idea. Like, all right, Dabo, like, we get it. Point made, back away from the argument. But it is fair for the frustration to be there. Like, okay, we all agreed on these rules. We showed up. This happens. We weren't being reckless with this. This is a guy that was asymptomatic early in the week when he was getting negative tests and he was not practicing. He practiced when he was asymptomatic and then tested negative Thursday prior to the trip. And on Friday, he was still asymptomatic and tested positive. This thing's weird. Like, stuff's weird. I was talking last night. Everyone in my house right now has a sniffly nose. Like, we all got a little bit of a cough. Like, it's winter. It's the seasons are changing. Like, what does it even mean to be symptomatic and asymptomatic? It's difficult and it's complicated. And I think that there's going to be, like, this was, I think from Dabo's perspective, a situation that could have been avoided. But I'm not going to be mad at Florida State either. I'm not going to tell them how to decide what's safe for the players and isn't. But I certainly can understand the frustration from Clemson's end.
You know, like I completely understand where he's coming from and his frustration. My problem with Dabo is his tendency to just immediately portray himself as the victim and everything that goes, you know, any kind of slight against Clemson, he just jumps out in the, we're the real victim, or I'm the victim here. It's like, dude, everybody loses. It's been a bad year. But to go back to, like, earlier this year when, like, Alabama had a game canceled, Nick Saban, yeah, it sucks. We wanted to play. I'm sure they wanted to play, but you kind of have to expect something like this list that was going to happen in 2020. And then compare it to Dabo's response to it happening to his team, where it's like, oh, they're out to get us. They're scared. Now
this, to be fair to Dabo, again, because I do feel like we're piling on. This has been the only game where a team has actually traveled, right? The whole year where a team has showed up to play and been sent home. Now, granted, it's their fault because they did have the player. Again, this goes back to my original point. Don't get on that plane until you have your tests squared away so that this problem doesn't happen. But I think that's why it makes even more frustrating. And to all the players that they were ready to go, I'm sure they wanted to play. And I kind of hope they don't get made up on December 12th because Clemson might hang 100 on them. But all that being aside, like, there are no winners where we stand right now. It's just making it all look worse.
There is no, like, it wasn't a high horse. But there is no, like, higher road than listening to Mike Norvell talk, because Mike Norvell gets to come out there and say this. Listen, man, I've had it. This is serious, and we take it seriously. And what are you going to say to Mike Norvell when he's out there saying that? Like, Mike Norvell has had no wins, and this isn't a win, but it's at least like a moral victory of some kind that he's out here as, like, this. Take it from me. The safety comes first. This is no joke.
COVID survivor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
COVID survivor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, like, think of this too from a different perspective of the teams. Like, there are a lot of programs out there who have had multiple games canceled this year, and it wasn't their fault. It had absolutely nothing to do with any of the players on their teams. It was their opponents having to cancel games because of their COVID issues. Yet their coaches aren't crying about it as, like, Dabo is.
I'm telling you, he can't help himself. It's November 23rd. It's just what he does at this time of year.
And I've defended him a lot for these kind of things when he does the nobody respects us stuff. But this is just a situation where it's like, dude, have some awareness of the reality of the situation. Mm. He's just got a complete lack of it in this case.
So half 100 or a whole 100 if they do end up playing on the 12.
I said a whole 100 if they want it.
Yeah.
That's why I'm kind of hoping maybe they reschedule with somebody else that'll go to. By the way, Mike Norvell did say he would chip in to a fund so they could reimburse Clemson and pay for their travel for the December 12th meeting.
Don't do that, Mike.
Don't do it, man.
don't pay $300,000 so that you can get your ass down.
Yeah. No. Okay. So this was a request into the show from Danny Cannell. We want DK's reaction to the instant reaction. Now, you know, you the Instant Reaction podcast. I know it records after your bedtime, but
it does.
You've been
after work.
You make it a part of your Sunday or Monday, clearly. So
I do. It's absolutely required listening because I want to make sure I'm in on the conversation. So I didn't want to make this a too long, a drawn out thing, but I just wanted some quick reactions and maybe some follow-up questions.
Okay.
For a couple of the comments that I heard while I was listening to it on my run on the beach early this morning. So you guys were talking about the Wisconsin-Northwestern game. And the first thing I noticed was fraudulent Fornelli, has a fascination with points off turnovers like they're a bad thing. Like, because going into the Indiana-Ohio State game, that was a big knock against Indiana. Too many points off turnovers. Then in Northwestern's upset victory over Wisconsin, it was like, well, five turnovers for Wisconsin. Like, at what point are turnovers actually a good thing and they're not a dock against a team's resume?
Points off of turnovers are a great thing. Forcing turnovers and converting them to points are a great thing. The problem that I've had, like with what Indiana was, and is now kind of Northwestern's same situation they're dealing with after their start, even after that win, is they're overly reliant on them. You have to be able to score points without forcing turnovers. You have to put together actual drives. Because the national average is, I just posted these stats on Sunday night on my Twitter account. The national average is like 16.4%. And, you know, we're talking about if you're up in the 20s or 30% of your points coming off turnovers, that tells me your offense isn't very good. Because I did the top 10 teams after this week in as far as points off turnovers or percentage of them. And number one is Baylor, I think, and Illinois was right behind them. Illinois might have been, whatever. But of the 10 offenses, as far as points per drive on offense, only of those top 10, I think only two were in the top 50 as far as points per drive on actual offense. And I think Wisconsin was one of them, and I can't remember who the second one was. So there's definitely a correlation between scoring too many of your points off turnovers. It's not that doing it itself in this vacuum is bad. It's just if it's responsible for half your points, that tells me your offense probably sucks.
A whole lot of numbers in there. I kind of tuned out when I heard the blah, 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 37%, blah, blah, blah.
I will DM you the tweet.
All right, sounds good. All right, so that was one of my questions. The other one was for one Barton Simmons when guys were talking about the Indiana-Ohio State game, and we were talking about Michael Penix, and you were like, that's all right. Like, I just want to make sure that you did see the stat line that he did have 491 yards passing against the number three ranked Ohio State Buckeyes. He's obviously doing something good.
No, so I actually got it's funny you say that because right before this we just recorded this, I got hit up on Twitter by someone who was like a little bit like angry. Being like, Barton, you must have been totally drunk on Saturday night. How dare you say some of the things you said? You owe some apologies. I was like, oh, damn. And so,
sir, there were 65 minutes.
And so I asked, like, what did I like? To whom do I owe an apology? And he was like, for starters, Michael Penix. And so I feel like I didn't express my sentiment properly, because I feel like Chip, Tom, like you guys can speak to this. I don't know how much I've been loving up Penix this season, but like I've been a Penix guy since last year. I think he's a really good player. I think my point in that was just, I know he put up like 490 throwing the football, but my point in that was that he did put up 490. And while I think he's a good player, if Michael Penix can put up 490, he ain't the only guy that can put up 490 on that defense. I think that was the point I was trying to make, is that Ohio State, that secondary is vulnerable. Michael Penix, as good of a player as he is, he ain't Trevor Lawrence. Ian Book is every bit the player Michael Penix is. Like there's the teams that Ohio State is going to have to beat are perfectly capable of doing exactly what Michael Penix did.
Yeah, and to support what you were saying, I think that it was also in the context of Penix was tossing some balls up there that probably wouldn't have been recommended. Like he would be under pressure and he would just kind of fling them down the field. And he was, you know, Indiana's receivers were making the plays and coming down with it, where it was more results over process kind of situation with some of those throws.
Okay, that's fair.
Listen, those we. we get caught in those instant reaction pods.
You know, it's also late at night. It's just like you're kind of going off the cuff. You haven't really had any time to prepare. So it's just
But see, I think this is why good, because then I come up with the listener's perspective. Obviously, some people were fired up. I was getting a little fired up. So I just wanted to kind of just nudge a little bit, dig a little deeper to clear some things up.
I'm with it. It offers us an opportunity to clarify what our points were intended to be. So, hey, you keep bringing it, Danny.
There we go.
It's like you're our auditor.
Auditor,
Do you want me to take some of the Indiana heat off of you, Barton? All right. Indiana fans, you should support me for what I'm about to say. You should agree with me. A little too much good for them going on, I think. They lost the game. And I feel like everybody's treating them like they won, just because they played it close.
That is the conversation. I will agree with you. I don't.
Too much of that for my taste.
Well, that's just your taste.
Moral victories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Good for you. But the conversation marketplace is out here just loving up the Hoosiers for making that interesting. I mean, that was 35-7, right? Yeah. Late in the game, third or fourth quarter, that thing was 35-7, and we were cruising towards an Ohio State cover and to just keeping the machine running. And the fact that the Hoosiers saved the entertainment factor of the noon slate is probably why everyone's loving them up. They can't help themselves.
So no moral victories agreed. Do we give moral defeats? Like, should I lay off Ohio State? Should I, or can I continue to lean into this? Like, they took a step back. They're not the Alabama combatant that I had thought they were.
I've been coming at it.
Believe it. Stick with it. Yeah.
I've been coming at it two ways. Like, the Justin Fields, I don't think is a regression. I think that was a bad game. I'm expecting Justin Fields to be more like the start to the season than he was like Indiana. But if you're going to come at the Ohio State pass defense and say, well, that is something that needs to be fixed or it's going to get exposed and picked apart in the playoffs, it's like those are the two things for me where I acknowledge the Fields' bad performance, but I don't think that's indicative of who Fields is or what Ohio State is. But the pass defense might be indicative of who Ohio State's defense is.
Can I give you guys a buddy of mine who's an NFL scout who I trust his eyes on this stuff more than my eyes, right? So I was just over the course of a conversation. This was before the Indiana game. All right. This was a week ago, maybe. We were talking Justin Fields. And I'm going to save you some of like the color because I don't want this to turn into some like aggregated like hot take of like Justin Fields because that wasn't the intent of the conversation. But it was a very honest opinion of him that was not as lofty as I would have expected. The thing, I'll say this. He said he doesn't have the ability to drive it like some of the top guys. He's got arm strength in the Burrow range, but not as accurate or smart. Like that was before the Indiana game. That was when he had like 7 touchdowns and 6 incompletions or something, you know, in the first 3 games. So with that in mind, it was interesting that he kind of had his rough game, and I am going to continue to sort of keep a closer look on him because, you know, I've been hyping this. Hey, do we see a next step with Fields to put him on the tier of Trevor Lawrence potentially? And I do think, again, that's just one man's opinion, but I would anticipate that Lawrence is still a pretty clear notch above in the NFL perspective draft wise.
Yeah, I would say my main knock against him is that he holds onto the ball way too long sometimes.
I think this happens with great offenses in college. I think you see it happen with Oklahoma somewhat. I think it happened to Ohio State. Their offensive talent and offensive play calling is such that a lot of times it's hit the open guy, like the first guy who's wide open. There's not a lot of depth to the progressions of getting through. All right, he's not there. Then I'm going to go to this guy. Then I'm going to get to my outlet. Or a lot of, you know, and I know there's some very basic one high, two high, where the middle of the field's open, you're going to read this half of the field. If the middle field's closed, you're going to read this half of the field. I get that, but you're going to see a whole lot more of that at the next level. And it's not anybody's fault. It's just they're so good and so efficient with their play calling that sometimes I think it's tough to translate that to the NFL, a la Baker Mayfield, who was so accurate at Oklahoma, and he made great throws, but then it's a massive jump when you're all of a sudden getting to a real complex offenses where you're having to read things through a lot more than you are at Oklahoma or Ohio State or a lot of schools.
While we're here in the Big Ten, Northwestern in the new AP poll is up to number 11. It is as high as Northwestern has been ranked in the AP poll since current head coach Pat Fitzgerald was a hard-nosed, capital T, tough linebacker for Northwestern, playing for Gary Barnett and the Rose Bowl Wildcats. Northwestern, do you believe they are the 11th best football team in the country?
I think they should be higher. I don't know if that means they should be, they are like the whatever best team, but I why is Oregon ranked ahead of Northwestern is what I'm asking. Oregon is 3-0 with wins against Stanford, Washington State, and UCLA. Three teams that I think are combined 2-5. Northwestern's 5-0 with a win over a Maryland team that's 2-0, win over an Iowa team that got off to an 0-2 start but has been just waxing everybody the last 3 weeks and is 3-2 now, a win over Purdue, and it just beat a top 10 team in Wisconsin. And so it has two more wins total, and it has better wins than any that Oregon has. So why is Northwestern ranked two spots behind Oregon? That's what I would like to know.
Well, Wisconsin had five turnovers, so that's probably what it was. No, I agree with you. I think they should be higher. I think this is an overall, when you're talking about Northwestern specifically, I've been getting a little bit more antsy and irritated, and I think this is going to be more problematic than anybody even thought. Is with the playoffs, the way this is going to unfold at the end of the year. Just the whole resume-based eye test, who are the four teams? And I know the college football playoff came out on Sunday and said, we talked about expansion, but we thought, you know, we decided to stick with four. I want to know what good reasons they had other than ESPN really didn't want to move it back. They wanted January 1st. They wanted January 10th because – I just don't know how you're going to get a legitimate four here, because I think there's going to be, and I think you could, you know, clearly you're going to have a legitimate one. Bama looks like they're starting to even separate themselves from the rest of the pack. And it'll probably be two and maybe three teams that are there, but man, are there going to be more teams than ever this year? They're going to have cases for that four spot, and they're all going to look completely different because some of them may have only played six or seven games. Some of them may have played seven or eight games, and some of them might have played 10 games, but not a conference championship. It is going to be controversial this year, and I think they completely missed an opportunity to get it right and to get it better for college football and to potentially change it for the future forever. But that resistance and, you know, stubbornness, I think, is going to create some controversy, because it does go to, like, how has Oregon only played three games versus not very good opponents? And Northwestern, as you mentioned, just had a top 10 win, and you still have Oregon ahead. You know, we're going to find out a lot more tomorrow night where they're thinking. My hunch is you're going to see a massive drop in Cincinnati BYU because they don't even want to get them close to the conversation.
Well, my theory on the 4-8 thing is the college football playoffs have a lot better chance of being completed if you're keeping four teams healthy over the course of 2 weeks than if you're trying to keep eight teams healthy over the course of 3 weeks. So
more games,
I think it's more logistical.
It's like a probability. If you have more games and more teams, got more chance of it not being able to go off as quite as scheduled. Do y'all know how many wins USC's opponents have this year?
Zero. They've only played like the one games against USC though.
They're 3-0, and their three opponents have zero wins in 2020.
So they're 0-1 non-USC games?
Let's see. Arizona lost to USC and then lost to Washington. And then Arizona State
hasn't played anybody since. And Utah's only game was at USC.
So what's going to happen, and this is going to drive me nuts, because I think two of the worst words in the English dictionary are eye test. There's going to be a whole lot of, we think this team is the best in the country. And while that's great for us and what we do, and every week, that's totally fine. And if we want to put out a top 25, or you want to do a top 128 with CBS Sports or whatever list we're putting out, that's great. But when that list determines the national champion, that is a major flaw. Like, I cannot stand that that's how, and it is every year, but I think this year it's going to be more glaring than ever. They're going to, we think this team is the best. And I just, it's going to drive me nuts.
I love, love, love Barton Simmons 2020 of the committee. They think they've got some pretty ass eyes. They think very highly of their own eyes. They think they got them. Yeah. All right. You mentioned BYU there. Coming up on the other side, we got to get into this because with Washington State unable to participate in the Apple Cup this weekend against Washington because of COVID tests and protocol, there has been some rumblings and some chatter about a potential addition of a Power 5 opponent to the BYU schedule. What to make of that, what it could mean for BYU, and what the playoff future might look like for the Cougars, and more next. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, so BYU will only play Washington if they can lock in a long-term agreement, right? And Washington will only play BYU if we can just go ahead and get this thing scheduled as a one-off. Do I have that correct?
I thought it wasn't a long-term agreement. It was
they just want to make sure it happens.
A guarantee that it happens this weekend and doesn't get the boot for a Pac-12 opponent that might pop up late in the week.
And like Washington,
the Arizona State game gets canceled, which is probably going to happen, I think.
Okay, and so Washington is trying to keep its options open because the Pac-12 has been slotting all
around.
I think
the Pac-12 is trying to keep the options open.
Oh.
Because Washington, like, they would have Washington should absolutely want to play this game. Like, what you've got an opportunity at Washington to add a sort of a contextual win outside of the Pac-12 kind of ecosystem. And BYU is going to be if BYU gets one more game in against San Diego State, then you got to be an undefeated BYU team against potentially a win over San Diego State that is looking like could be the best group of five team in college football. That in some ways, that's a more revealing win for Washington, a more revealing resume builder than a win over Arizona, Utah, whoever.
Yeah, I wrote about it in the Monday after too. If I'm BYU, and like they said, they're willing to play the game as long as it's guaranteed that they'd play the game and that the Pac-12 doesn't pull the rug out from under them and say, actually, no, we're going to have Washington play Utah because Utah's game against Arizona State's been canceled and we want to keep it within the conference and blah, blah, blah. But I don't think BYU should play the game. At least I think BYU should wait until Tuesday night to decide what it wants to do because they need to see where they are in the college football playoff rankings. Because if they're in the top 10, they have absolutely nothing to gain by playing Washington. They are in a position where they're not, we can pretend they're going to the college football playoff, blah, blah, blah. They're not. And beating Washington, wouldn't it be the difference between BYU playing in the playoff and BYU missing the playoff? It could be the difference between BYU being in a New Year's Six game and being outside a New Year's Six game. Because if they're in position right now to get one of those at-large berths and they lose to Washington, they're out.
They don't get the group of five. It is like the BYU hand that they have as an mm-hmm. independent
yeah,
means that they have yeah. to get one of those two at-larges that normally goes to Florida after they lose the SEC championship game.
Yes. So,
man, I don't like the way you're thinking, Fornelli. I don't like that at all. I want the competitive team that tweets out the swaggiest photo of the year with Zach Wilson that says anytime, any place, anywhere, and their team official team account tweets it out, and then less than 24 hours later, there's an opportunity to play somebody anytime, anywhere, any place, and they say, thanks, but no thanks.
No, but they didn't say no thanks. They're telling Washington, yeah, as long as you guarantee we play the game this weekend. I'm saying they're taking the wrong approach. They're taking your approach. I'm saying okay. It's the wrong one.
I'm with Danny here. Like this is so maddening. Like I understand the perspective here, Tom. Like you are making the case for the administrator, for the decision maker. This is that is a sound reasoning. And yet, then let's just quit all the group of five bluster. Let's just shut the hell up. Like, let's just get relegated to your little group of five corner and play out the season. And you know what? Like, have a group of five championship at the end of it. But don't sit – like, you've got to do things that are uncomfortable. You have to, expose yourself in a way that the Power Five doesn't. That's just the way it is. That's the pecking order. If you want to level up, you got to do things that are a little uncomfortable relative to the rest of the country. This is an opportunity. If the game is canceled and there's no game, well, all right. So they had 4 days of prep work that gets thrown out the window.
BYU's got something going with somebody else.
Well, let's do that too.
Right.
Do that too. Do it. And if you can get a game with Cincinnati December 5th, great. If you can get a game with Oregon December 5th, great. Whatever you can do, do it also. Load it up, man, because this is the only chance you're going to get. How many opportunities is there going to be realistically for a group of five to get in the college football playoffs? And you say they have nothing
to gain.
You're
not getting in. They're right. not getting
this
no
year.
What?
They could. You don't think
no,
this
they
year
can't.
They could?
No.
I think they could. I think
no.
they could this year if.
Danny,
I think
there
they could
no
if,
way.
If they could schedule two more games versus Power Five opponents, their resume would be approaching some what? Other teams that are in there.
What Power Five opponents could they realistically schedule that would be good enough to put them in the playoff? Because Washington isn't good enough.
Well, hold on now.
Especially if you beat it, because now Washington sucks.
That's not true.
No, Washington can win the Pac-12.
Yeah, Washington could win the Pac-12. And then you got the Pac-12 champ on your resume. And secondly, you're right. It probably doesn't matter. And they probably don't get in regardless of what they do. But then at the end of the year, when they're sitting there pounding their chest about, oh, we could have played anybody. Like, you should have just given us a chance. Like, they can't do that if they didn't take this opportunity. But if they go and play Washington on short notice, if they go and play someone else next week, week after that on short notice, and just go out there and just ball out and win, just like hold court on the playground, then
I hear you.
They could say whatever the hell they want for as long as they want. Have the parade, give the signing bonuses, do all the stuff UCF did, because you just went out there and like big time.
But what did
everybody.
UCF do? What did UCF do?
They declared
when it got left out of the playoff.
Oh, it beat Auburn.
It beat Auburn in what? In what bowl game, Chip?
The Peach Bowl.
So if BYU doesn't play Washington and it gets a New Year's Six berth and it's in the Peach Bowl or it's in the Cotton Bowl and it plays a Power Five program and beats them, guess what? They just did what you said they had to do.
But no,
two avenues, except one comes with a giant check at the end and you're an independent program who's on your own. You don't have a conference to support you. The smart thing to do is play for the New Year's Six berth, get in Oklahoma or somebody like that, like we talked about on Saturday night's reaction show, and beat them.
That's reasonable.
No, I don't think it is, because when you beat them, that team's be like, hey, we didn't want to be there. We didn't even want to play.
Who
like,
cares? Hey, we weren't motivated. That's them being babies.
And doesn't BYU, aren't they one of the teams that I haven't read about having a lot of financial problems? Like, don't they have all the church money and TV money? Because they have their own network too. Like, they have a lot of problems, but money isn't one of them. I think they have to be playing for reputation and the sliver. Like, because I agree, in a normal year, they are never getting in. I think this year I'd put it at 1%, maybe 2%. If you can increase that by scheduling Washington and another team and whoever else, like they're saying, anybody, anywhere, anytime, then do it, especially this year.
There is no way in the world BYU or Cincinnati are getting in the playoff.
Okay,
it's
so
not happening.
If you said if they're in the top 10, they've got no incentive. Is there a ranking
scenario where they get in? I got
Go
a scenario
ahead.
Where
tell
they
you
get
why
in.
You're wrong.
All right, Texas A&M gets beat by Auburn, then Texas A&M's out of there. Ohio State loses a game. They're
still
out of there
in.
Because they're
no still
Ohio
in.
State's still in.
I guarantee you right now, Danny. I guarantee you right now that Ohio State, Clemson, and Alabama are already in, no matter what happens. No matter what happens.
Right now, you're willing to take that right now. I'll take a bet on that.
All right, look, Alabama's whatever. SEC is in. Big Ten is in. ACC is in. Clemson wins out. Ohio State wins out. Alabama wins out. Those three are in. Okay, so then it's about who are you taking a two-loss Florida? Are you taking basically them or A&M? Or them or Pac-12.
Or Notre Dame.
Big 12.
Or Notre Dame.
Or Notre Dame. Okay.
One loss.
Let's just say Clemson wins by 17. You know, whatever. Like, let's give it a, let's make this.
What if Notre Dame wins?
Possibility.
You know what happens if Notre Dame wins? Well, the first loss didn't count. Trevor Lawrence didn't play. So we're going to give Clemson another shot.
There is no chance.
Danny, it's a TV event. It's not a realistic playoff.
They won't want a three-time game when one team's already lost it twice.
But none of this matters. None of this matters. None of this matters because all they should do is just pony up to the table and put the chips down and say, let's play ball and make
Thank
a
you.
Statement.
Thank
like,
you.
Who cares? Make a statement for like all of Group of Five and just and just lay it on the table.
Agreed.
Be a badass dude and walk in there and pick a fight.
And
you know,
beat them all and still get to the New Year's Six and beat another one. Line them up.
I understand where you guys are coming from with the BYU thing. Again, they want to play the game. Washington won't guarantee it. The Pac-12 won't guarantee
Anytime,
it.
Anytime, any BYU place, anywhere, is... as long as it's on this day, as long as we have these assurances, as long like, give me a break. Just play ball. Like, let's do this.
I get it. I understand. I want to see the game. As a fan, I want to see the game. But using my brain instead of my – I sit there and say that if I'm BYU, it's the smart decision that they're making. They're making the best decision.
I do think Washington might win the Pac-12. And if you've got to win over the Pac-12 champ, then that'd be pretty good.
I don't think that's going to carry that much weight.
So Tuesday night, it comes out. Like if BYU is 14 on Tuesday night, are you like, I don't know, BYU, you might want to get up in there.
Yes. No, if they're at 14, they should 100% a billion percent play Washington on any terms available because that's the only way
they're
going to get.
I don't think it matters if they're 6 on Tuesday night. You play the game.
I'm saying.
Yeah, I get it. But just to belabor this point further, they can't put BYU or Cincinnati in this year, A, because it sets a precedent for the future, whereas now next year, if you're in a similar situation, you can't just completely ignore the G5 like you have been all the time because now there's a precedent that says, well, you let them in last year. And B, when they do expand to 8 games, they have to save the Group of Five thing as a reason for a narrative for expanding. So that way they could say, we've decided to expand to make the playoff more inclusive and give everybody a chance, because that's a much better thing to say. We're expanding because it means 4 more games and that means a lot more money. And that's really what this is all about. And that's why we're not moving off of New Year's Day, even though we probably should, because this is just a TV event and ESPN has other games scheduled for other Sundays. So we can't play on those days.
Those good ass eyes don't have to do a damn thing they don't want to do any year ever unless
and they're
BYU,
just gonna pick the 4 teams they want
unless
no matter
BYU
what
BYU picks a fight with the biggest baddest dude they could find and you know locks the door behind them and, I mean I just do it
but one more thing let's not forget that this year any bowl game that's being played can pick any team it wants to be in its game, no matter their record. You could be 0-8 Michigan, and they, if they want Michigan and Michigan's fans will come, they're going to ask Michigan. So what makes you think the College Football Playoff Selection Committee is going to take any kind of the same approach? They're going to pick any team they want to get the best ratings they can, to get the most money they can out of it. Because again, the only reason we're playing this season is to save as much money as possible, kids.
I don't buy the ratings thing.
I don't either. Michigan State got in. They were awful. There's been some bad.
That's not the same situation.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, if they were doing truly ratings every year, they would have the biggest. I do think
clear, they need to maximize profits this year.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't buy the conspiracy.
So the bowl eligibility thing, this was brought up on your, Barton Simmons writes, what is your coach's, when it's not a winners and losers, what is it?
Coaches of the week.
And it includes a hot seat section. Hot seat includes this week, spotlight on Virginia Tech's Justin Fuente. So Virginia Tech has the active bowl streak right now, 28 bowls in a row. It's possible that Virginia Tech, which travels really, really well to bowl games, especially if they're within about a 5 to 6 hour drive from Blacksburg in Southwest Virginia, it's possible that they could still go somewhere, regardless of their record, because it's looking like they're going to have a losing record for the first time since almost, I guess, before the bowl streak started. You think Justin Fuente is coaching in that bowl game when they get invited at 4-6?
I think so.
You think so? You're going to hang on to the Justin Fuente experience for another year?
I mean, so the buyout will be, after December 15th, the buyout will be $10 million.
Right. It drops.
It's 12 and a half as we sit here today. I don't know. I don't have a good enough sense for just sort of like what the bloodthirst of that, you know, booster group is, or you know, whoever's doing the executing over there. I don't get a sense for how aggressive they are or not. But I mean, next year he would be, I think, it goes without saying, he'd be playing for his job.
It's been trending in the wrong direction,
yeah,
without question. This would be the ultimate kind of COVID pass, I think, if he did get it.
Right.
That, hey, you know, even if it's $10 million, it's still a lot of money. Let's try to make it work. I have some buddies that I've worked with at ESPN that were PAs, that are hardcore Virginia Tech Hokies, that have been the most ardent Justin Fuente supporters, who more recently I've heard from them, you know, maybe this isn't working out. And when you start losing your faithful, you know, that crowd, then, you know, you can start seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. But I do feel like this would be the type of program that there won't be enough heat, enough desire to cut those type of checks where he'll get the 1 year pass.
As we turn our attention to the week 13 early line look ahead, a reminder that many of these games discussed here are also going to be available in this week's CBS Sports College Football Pick'em Challenge. So it's Monday afternoon. The card isn't set yet. It is going to be released on Tuesday, and that contest starts every Tuesday. We'll run up until noon on Saturday. It is the biggest games from Saturday. You pick them against the spread, and you have a chance to win $1,000 guaranteed cash prize. You can play solo. $1,000 is going to be given away every single week. It is free to enter. You log in, say play solo, play now, click all your winners against the spread, submit it, boom, you're in it. Or you could start a pool and you could compete against your friends, compete against your coworkers. There are season long standings. I mean, it is all going at cbssports.com/college. Once again, that is cbssports.com/college. The biggest games against the spread on Saturday. Shout out to K-Dub, who is in first place right now for the season. Had 10 correct winners on last week's card, up to 73 for the season, holding a 2-game lead on Poshmark. Hopefully y'all are Cover Three podcast listeners. But even if you have not been competing for as long as some of these others on the standing, you can be winning this cash prize every single week. CBSSports.com/college to play. Once again, that is CBSSports.com/college to play. Texas, Iowa State, Friday. Texas is a 2-point home favorite. Top 25 game, so it's not the trap, the sleeper trap that you might ascribe to Tom Herman. We have not seen Texas since its back-to-back wins against Oklahoma State and West Virginia with the Kansas game postponed. I feel like, you know, we put them to the side. Now we pick it up, you know, work on the gears, maybe hit some WD-40. Where's Texas going to be at? And do you trust the Longhorns to cover 2 points at home against an Iowa State team that just absolutely worked Kansas State over the weekend?
A lot of dueling principles in this one. Tom Herman's playing a ranked team. So like you said, you can almost expect him to do well. There's a ranked underdog in Iowa State you kind of want to go against. But on the other side, Matt Campbell is an underdog, and he's 22-8 against the spread as an underdog in his career. So I don't know. My gut says I'm going to go with Iowa State, though, because, you know, it's Texas.
Because Texas could win out. I don't know if Texas will win out, right? They've got Iowa State at home this weekend, then they finish at Kansas State at Kansas. If Texas beats Iowa State, it gets the head-to-head advantage against Iowa State, and that might be enough. Also, with the win against Oklahoma State, win against West Virginia, winning out puts Texas in the Big 12 championship game.
I, for a while, have believed that the Big 12 championship would be a rematch of the Red River shootout. I'm sticking to it. I think Texas gets the best of Iowa State this weekend. I don't know. To say a win against...
They might, yeah.
Yeah, the win against Kansas State was impressive. I don't know. I still have... I don't know. Brock Purdy's been less than impressive. I think they're a little bit one-dimensional. With Breece Hall, I think Texas will be able to have some success when you are facing a team that is one-dimensional like that. They've been playing better, kind of like Texas in this spot.
And we're one-dimensional this weekend.
No,
against Kansas State.
Yeah, no, that was far and away their best performance of the season. That was the first time I watched them, and I was like, oh, wow, no, this is actually a good team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The buzzer on the campfire is Tom Herman needs to win out. And so this would be interesting if, you know,
or Urban, I got to hear the buzz.
Well, or he's gone.
And right. But see, with this
Urban,
is the case.
Urban being the guy that they want, right. Or they think they can get.
Yeah.
They,
but man, you better make sure.
Wait, there is
Could
such.
Could you imagine that? Like they get rid of Tom Herman and then, Urban's like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't even know if they – I don't know how realistic Urban is. I think there's an assumption that job would make a lot of sense for him. But I think, yeah, like there's – the fan base has definitely convinced themselves that if Herman's out, Urban's in.
The long-held tradition of Texas convincing itself it can get a coach that nobody's quite sure that coach wants.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a gulf between who they want and who they think they can get. You said Urban is who they want, who they think they can get. And there's just like so much room between those two things for Texas.
Well, the irony is Herman was who they wanted and who they got.
I know.
And he's not been it yet.
Mm. Also on Friday, Notre Dame, North Carolina, the Fighting Irish, a narrow 4.5-point favorite in Chapel Hill. Upset alert.
I think that's a scary game.
Nah.
Tar Heels money line on the field.
So I don't hate it.
Notre Dame's not ready to play. Get loose like this. Couple quick touchdowns. Ian Book starts to press.
Mm-mm. Just I'm kind of in a I don't buy North Carolina against good defenses.
That's fair.
Think who have they laid an egg against this year? That's good defenses.
Let's see. Their first egg.
Florida State.
No, it's just, I mean, they haven't really played a good defense. That's the thing. BC was probably the best defense that they played, and that was one of the more troublesome games that they've had.
Yeah, they really haven't played a lot of good defense.
I think they've got some talent. I mean, obviously, I think they have some talent where they could put up some points. It'd be interesting to see if they could jump out early and you kind of flip the script a little bit, you know, make Notre Dame try to throw it a little bit more if they can keep up the pace.
I also think, though, that matchup-wise, that that's just a game where Notre Dame can absolutely dominate them. Like, offensively, I feel like they could just control the ball and suck the air out of that game so fast.
We'll see. Tar Heels, money line. The Clemson last year made them believe they could do it. I'm telling you, get the job done. It's going to be on Saturday, on Friday. Penn State, Michigan is a nationally televised football game between two teams whose combined record is 2-8. Penn State and Michigan. And that is 0-5 Penn State, by the way, against 2-3 Michigan. The Wolverines, coming off that program-changing win against Rutgers, are 2-point favorites. I mean, is it just sickness that makes you watch this?
So you're saying that two well-known brands are getting a spotlight game despite their records? I can't believe the College Football Playoff would ever consider doing something similar. Hell yeah, I'm watching this game. Come on. It's like, it's Michigan and Penn State. It's the biggest game of the year.
Principal under?
I don't know if I want to bet this game. I'm probably going to watch it. You know what? I would bet Penn State simply because Michigan shouldn't be favored against anybody.
0-5 value. Yeah. Like, we're always looking for the winless teams with value.
Also, isn't Penn State winless against the spread too?
Oh yeah.
Oh God. Oh yeah. Penn State lock of the week.
I want to see the Cade McNamara era continue.
Is that switched over? Are we just letting McNamara run with it?
It's got to be. How would you go back?
You have to. Because, yeah, that's two games in a row where McNamara has come in and played better than Milton.
Yeah. I think it's an easy switch.
Okay. What other games from the Week 13 slate have y'all's attention?
Ohio State thinks it's just going to walk into Memorial Stadium in Champaign as a 4-touchdown favorite.
They're gonna limp in after the moral defeat or whatever.
I hope when Illinois loses by 35, everybody's like, "Yeah, but they played hard."
I love it.
Kent State at Buffalo. Buffalo is a 7.5-point favorite right now. It's a big number for old Kent State.
Yeah, I think I'm on Kent State there.
Oh man.
How about
some good ones? I want to save some of these for locks because I got some good ideas for the locks.
Well, how about this one? USC is a 13.5-point favorite against Colorado.
Buffs. Buffs. Right there. Buffs.
That's like I've firmly been on the USC is not as bad as either Chip or Barton want to believe it is bandwagon, but that's a lot of points considering how USC has played. So I don't know.
Bet on USC. And then lose, and then tell me how you feel about USC. It's a harrowing experience. And then
so bet against USC.
I have bet all three of USC's games this year. I bet them twice to win and cover. I bet them twice to cover, and they've lost.
Right.
And I bet them. I faded them this weekend with Utah, and they covered.
See, I bet on them this weekend against Utah.
Yeah,
I knew what came up. I can't wait to watch the Iron Bowl. I mean, it feels like Alabama's been cruising. They're a 24-point favorite against Auburn. Kind of curious to see what kind of fight Auburn can put up. Can they make it interesting? Can they carry it to the second half?
I feel like it's kind of like a principle where if Auburn's getting that many points in an Iron Bowl,
yeah.
Considering how Auburn typically plays in these games against Alabama, I feel like you kind of have to take Auburn here.
I mean, it's going to be close. It's going to be competitive, and you can see it on CBS Sports, CBSSports.com, or on the CBS Sports app. That's right. Every SEC on CBS Game of the Week is available for free. Watch it through the CBS Sports app. CBS Sports HQ will be your home for all pregame, halftime, and postgame fun all around the Iron Bowl. Auburn doesn't win in Bryant-Denny. The game's in Bryant-Denny. Alabama's going to win. Auburn's a pretty. I mean, I get the idea of why you take the Tigers, but I don't see them marching into Tuscaloosa and coming out with the win.
Hey, two of the best games of the weekend. One West Virginia hosting Oklahoma, who might be like the second best team in college football right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is Vanderbilt,
Tennessee
at night.
Yep.
Yeah. Tennessee. I think they've won like three of the last six against the Vols.
And there is a certain radio host who has been well known, who campaigned against one head coaching hire and absolutely backed another one, who all of a sudden, and this is as close to again, maybe I was wrong, has said if they lose that game, potentially it's time for a change. So watch out, Jeremy Pruitt. You talk about hot seat.
Oh, well, when that guy turns on you, you're done.
Exactly.
Make sure that you are subscribed to the Cover 3 podcast. We will be diving back into these games and more on the Locks Edition Holiday Locks. We are recording on Wednesday, so make sure you subscribe. Tuesday night after the new college football playoff rankings come out, we will have college football playoff rankings reaction. We'll see where BYU lands and whether or not they need to call Washington right away. The debate will be settled on Tuesday night, so make sure you subscribe. Follow him on Twitter at Danny Cannell. Follow him at Tom Finelli. Follow him at Barton Simmons. Follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
BYU is doing the right thing.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.